Okay, Boker Tov, everyone. Today's daf in Masechet Yevamot, brought to you from Eretz HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Yud Chet. We're at that Halakha Mishnah on Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beit. Achat Omeret Meit. And we're still talking about the issue over here of the Ne'emanut of Eitzara. So we have two women that are married to one guy. And one of them says mate, and one of them says lo mate. This is talking about a continuation of a case. They traveled overseas, and they have different reports as to what happened overseas. One said he did die, one says he doesn't die. But remember, we do not believe a tzora about the other tzora. And therefore, zo shomeret mate, tinase v'tito ketuvata. So the one who said that he did die, well, we've already seen that. We believe her about herself, and we paskined that both, in terms of, remember, because Beis Hillel ended up agreeing with Beit Shammai, that once we allow her to get married, we allow her to take the ketubah as well. Vizosho Amered Lomate, Masha'en Kane, the other one, the tzara who claims that he didn't die, obviously is not allowed to get married and certainly cannot connect to ketubah. I mean, it wouldn't even make sense if we would believe the tzora about her, because she was shavyanav shechaticha de surah, and she went ahead and said beferish, I am a surah to marry. So binogea, I mean, the question of what we even have to say this about is basically, if in the end this is called an amatla, she's notenet amatla ledvarea, if she explains why she had said that, so it's possible to take off a shavya nafshe chaticha de yisura. So the mission, nonetheless, has to address this issue. That's how Tosis points it. Because otherwise, I mean, this is absurd. Obviously, if a woman says, I'm asura, she's asura. Even if she's objectively mutarit, she's asura. Because that has a din of a neder. She's saying, I'm not allowed to get married. Achat omeret meit. Now, how about we have a different situation? We have a situation of conflicting edus. So one of them says he died. The other one says he was killed. Now, both of them agree that he's no longer alive. Rabbi Meir says, well, now, since they are actually the equivalent of edus mukheshet, each one is saying the other thing, in this case, they should not be able to marry. And we'll see that there's, why is it that Rabbi Meir is ready to say that a tzora can be makrisha? And why didn't he say in the first case that, well, if a tzora can be makrisha, then if she says lo mate, she's also being makrisha. So we're going to talk about what that difference would be, whether Rabbi Meir argues in the first case as well. But one issue that we need to take into consideration in this case that we don't need to take into consideration in the other case is simply this. If both of them are trying to become mutarot and each one has a different take on what happened, it sounds very likely that they are not in this in order to answer the other one, of course, because they're trying to be mutar themselves. So the logical conclusion is that actually both of them are jumping to a conclusion, you see. So the one jumped to the conclusion, okay, he's dead. The other one jumped to the conclusion, he was killed. Whatever the situation was, there was a war, there were bombs. One assumes he was killed by the bombs. He just doesn't really know. The other one assumes he ran away, ended up dying with the partisans. She doesn't know. So, okay, so one says he died. The other one says he was killed. Then it looks like that actually we shouldn't believe either of them because they jumped to a conclusion. So therefore, this does introduce a new dimension to the case that we haven't taken into consideration before. This is how Tosafos understands the difference between the two cases. We'll see later on. So, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon Omrim, even in this case, Ho'il v'zo v'zo modocha in kayam. Look, I mean, if one of them said that he's alive, obviously she could not marry. But in this case, if both of them agree that he's not alive, then they can both get married. So therefore, even though if we would have had a case of Aiden, This is called Edut Mukheshet. You can't have a situation where one aide says he was killed and the other one said he died, because that basically that's not Edut at all. The question over here is whether each one of these women has nothing to do with the other woman, because we said that a tzara is simply not believed with the other one. So we take each one separately. Tainas Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon. And on the basis of each one separately, well, why not? The fact that a tzara says differently, we've already said that a tzara has no right to open her mouth about what the situation would be lahalach about the other one. And how about if a witness, one witness comes and says, mate, and another witness says, lo, mate? Here we're talking about a real aide, not a tzara, not an isha. Or isha omeret is not a tzara, mate. Isha omeret, lo, mate. And over here, it's talking about, as opposed to the mission we had last night, it's talking about where we had not yet been matir her to get married before the other witness showed up. So in that case, we do not create the heter. It says, lo teitzei me'heterah harishon, we learned yesterday. That's where we had a heter. But if we hadn't yet created the heter, then we don't have the situation of kol mokom she'amina teirah ed echad. Now, let's take a look at the Mishnah more closely. It says that if one tzara says he died, and the other one says he didn't die, so the tzara who said that he died is allowed to marry, and the tzara who said that he did not is usur. But it's mashma that that's only because somebody is not muted here. It's Mordechai. It's mashma that that's only because taima da amra lo mate. The reason that she cannot get married, it's mashma because Mordechai is because she actually said he didn't die, and therefore, of course, she's an usur. But if ishtika, if she hadn't said anything, so then what are you trying to tell me? She would be allowed to marry? I don't understand. I thought, didn't you say a minute ago that ein tzara me'ida l'chaverta? I mean, look, if she didn't say anything at all, she still wouldn't be allowed to marry. So what are you bringing me a case where she said that he didn't die, where obviously she's not allowed to marry if she anyway was shavya nafsha chaticha di sura? So we have a contradiction. Before we said that we don't believe it, Sarah, now you're saying if she hadn't said he didn't die, she would have gotten married. No, of course not. The point over here is that this case, in one sense, is a bigger chiddush. Obviously, if she hadn't said anything, she can't get married. We already said one tzara cannot be matir another tzara. That's not the question. The problem is that over here, she gufa did something that makes us think that actually, in this case, I might have thought, now, why is she opening up her big fat mouth, right? What if she would just be quiet? So let's think about what might happen. She was together with this woman. She's not saying anything when this woman, her tzara, is saying her husband died. Now, there, it makes sense. She doesn't say anything. Why doesn't she say anything? Because she knows that in the event that the husband shows up, and now we catch her tzara in adultery with this other guy, and it turns out that she had lied, that's great. A perfect romantic ending to the story. She is forever messed up. We boot her out of the house. At last, I have my dear husband to myself. Now, why in the world would she want to open up her big fat mouth and claim that he didn't die? She should be happy. Yeah, let her lie. Let her lie through her teeth. Okay, go marry somebody else, right? So the very fact that she says that he didn't die is the biggest raya that he did die. Why? Because the only thing left for her to do to mess up the life of this tzara is never let her get married again, the witch. So therefore, I will say, no, it's not true. He never died. What are you talking about? You can't get married. Let her sit and stew, right? So dafka, we should conclude, no, he must have died. And she is only saying, lo, mate, She said, well, what do you mean? But I mean, she wouldn't say lo mate if that means that she also won't be able to get married. Ah, that's no problem. And what did Shimshon do? He pulled the building down on himself and on the Plishtim together. That's what she's doing. Tamut nafshi and Plishtim is what she's shouting. This Sarah of mine, this Plishtia, let the house fall on her head, even if it takes me with it. And so I might have thought that that's the only logical explanation. And Tamut nafshi and Plishtim kamra. That's why she's willing to go along with it and ruin her own life. Therefore, Kamash Malan, even so, she can't get married based on that kind of logic. Now, what about the case, next case, where they contradict each other? One says he was killed and one says he died. So over there, we've got this weird situation where Rabbi Meir, who never argued on the earlier case, now he says, well, this is a contradiction and therefore they're not allowed to marry. Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon said, no, since they both admit that they're alive, the husband is alive, they can get married. So then that means that Rabbi Meir is saying that a tzara does have input into the dispensation of her own tzara. So then why didn't he argue about the first case where one said he is dead and one said she isn't dead? Why do we only argue about the case where one said he died and one said he was killed, where they're basically agreeing that he's dead? Isn't that strange? Says Rabbi Elazar, it is strange. Obviously, we're meant to understand that Rabbi Meir argued on the first case, and he's taking this case as well as his model. Even if they just contradict each other in terms of how he died, we also have a mukheshet. And as far as what the Mishnah had said before, that Rabbi Meir didn't argue, he didn't argue. He waited till now to argue. But that first part of the Mishnah must have been going, Aliba the Rebbe Yehuda, Rebbe Shimon, who say the same thing over here. A tzara has no input. And since they both agree and they have each one has their own narrative, the narrative works for each one of them, even though we cannot get the narrative together. And they don't seem to be able to agree. Rebbe Yochanan says, I don't think so. I think Rebbe Meir actually agrees in the first case. And he would also be made that a tzara cannot say that the husband didn't die. Because Ba'afila Rabbi Meir made that. Rabbi Meir agrees that if she says that he didn't die, that's exactly what the Chachamim said, that when it comes to the Edus Isha, she has nothing to say about her husband's death. And saying lo meit be'edut isha is not even considered to be a hakhasha, because the Rabbanan said a woman who comes along and says her husband is dead is considered to be the equivalent of a real ne'emanut. So somebody comes along now, the tzara comes along now, and wants to say otherwise, the heck with it. We don't pay any attention. But in the other case, where we have a real contradiction, that is hakhasha. She's not saying lo meit. Now, tonight, it says at the end, Eid Omer Meit ve'Eid Omer Lo Meit. Isha Omeret Meit v'Isha Omeret Lo Meit. So then, Arezu Lo Tinase. Now, when it says Isha Omeret, I mean, that seems to include even a tzara. No, it says Isha, any Isha. I mean, we were talking about a tzara until now. It would be mashbara even when we're talking about a tzara. So how do we understand this? See, according to Rabbi Elazar, there's really no problem, because Rabbi Elazar said that, yes, Rabbi Meir disagreed with the first part in the Mishnah, and he says that a tzara can be makrisha. Okay, so then this part of the Mishnah is a stam aliba de Rabbi Meir, who holds that a tzara can be makrisha. And therefore, the Mishnah says that in the event that two women are makrishot, so even if they're tzarot, aliba de Rabbi Meir, that would work. But according to Rabbi Yochanan says that Rabbi Meir agrees that there cannot be an argument about whether he died or not. That was the whole point of making the tikkun that the Isha is ne'emanet. So how do you explain this statement? What would be the point of saying an Isha if it were coming to include any Isha, I mean, including the tzara? Okay, that's kasha. I agree. That's a problem. According to Rabbi Yochanan, what would be the basis of this closing case? I mean, we didn't find a shita like that. Okay, so Obviously, we're going to have to explain why it doesn't say to Yuvta, but I think we should first finish the daf. Okay, we're ready now for Sir Richard.
Zot Helika Mishnah.
You should have heard Doc last night. But of course it was Shabbos. Thank you. Aishal Shalchak Yuvala Lemidinatayam. Okay. Now let's talk about the interrelationship of the ne'emanut or lack of ne'emanut about the question of whether the husband died on associated issues. For instance, we said she's not believed about her tzara, only believed about herself. What about if the tzara has been eating truma? So I understand we don't believe her to be bater the tzara, but I mean, we believe her l'chumra, that at least you should stop eating truma for husband was a kohen. Now, this raises, of course, the general question of ne'emanut, and let's take a look at the machlokas that we find here. So, this woman comes back, and she says, my husband died. So, we already said, yes, she can get married, and she can take her ketuvah, but we do not believe her vis-a-vis her tzara. And we don't believe her vis-a-vis a mother-in-law's heter either, because we had the five women or the seven women that we simply do not trust to say that they are allowed to get married. But what about the question, if the tzara was a bat Yisrael and she had been married to this man who, according to this tzara, is dead now, and that man was a kohen, and she's been eating truma. Does she continue to eat truma despite the fact that based on the other woman's edus, we allow the other woman to get married, and we said the husband is dead, and then when we look at tzara number two, we say, no, the husband is alive, and you can continue to eat truma. There's something strange about that, isn't there? Says Rabbi Tarfon, well, that's the halacha, because basically, when we say that we do not believe a tzara about her tzara, it means that whatever she says is irrelevant. If we're not going to believe her that she's allowed to get married, we're not going to believe her that she has to stop eating truma. So how do you explain that? Now, there's a question. Tosis says, maybe, since this is sort of, wouldn't you say, a contradiction, that the same business should be paskening that this man is both alive and dead? So for woman number one, he's dead. And for woman number two, he's alive. I mean, how can one Bezdin make a psak like that? This is all part of the idea of the Shnei Shvilin, when two people come to ask at the same time, and the question of a Safek Tuma, Brishut Rabim, and so on. I mean, we don't have cases where the court would be matir both things, both directions. So Tosfos says maybe this is talking only about Truma Derabbanan. And it's not that we would really be matir a truma d'oraisa, where there's a contradiction on the basis of the d'oraisa that we paskin. The problem is that the Rambam says quite clearly that we're talking about even truma d'oraisa. So that's not going to be able to be our only approach. Anyway, this is Rabbi Tarfon's opinion. Now, Rabbi Akiva says, look, I mean, how do you allow her to do a suffix iser? I mean, ein zo haderech motziatami de'avira. Is she really going to be able to lead a clean life while she is eating truma based on her marriage to a man who, based on her tzora's behavior, is dead, and she went and married somebody else? I mean, there's still going to be at least a doubt raised in your mind and in her mind. So what, we don't even chayish for this avera v'chiyav misa b'dei shamayim if it's talking about truma d'oraisa? How do we do that? No. I say, says Rabbi Akiva, achite asura linaseh. On the one hand, you're telling her she's usur to get married because we don't believe. So then on the other hand, you'd still have to be machmir and go to say she's usur milecho betruma because you don't really know. And therefore, maybe it's not enough to be matir her to get married, but it should be enough to be machmer on her not to be able to eat truma. Now, how about if she goes la'ever hayam and she says something that has to do with her mother-in-law? And what she says is, we had this case yesterday. She says that my husband died, and therefore I am no longer the daughter-in-law of this woman. And then her husband died. So it's first I establish myself as not being her daughter-in-law, and therefore not being chashud that I hate her, because I'm basically out of there, has nothing to do with me. I am completely objective about this. I only hated her guts until 15 minutes ago, but now I love her and you should trust me because I'm not her daughter-in-law anymore. So in that case, where she says, first my husband died, then my father-in-law died. So she can get married and she collects her ketubah, whereas chamuta asura, like we said yesterday, that we believe that the long-term hatred between them is not dissipated just because of the fact that technically she's not the daughter-in-law. So like we said last night. Now, so in that case, we would not allow the mother-in-law to marry. But what about if the mother-in-law was a non-Kohenet and she was married to a Kohen? Can she continue to eat truma? So, says Rabbi Tarfon, in the event that the mother-in-law was a Bat Yisrael, a Kohen, and the ostensibly dead husband was a Kohen, just because her daughter-in-law hates her guts told her that the man is dead, doesn't mean that we have to worry about her eating truma. She can go ahead and eat truma, to be Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Nami, come on, Ein Zo Derech Motzia Mide Avira. We need to be machmer in both directions. I mean, it's true that we suspect her of trying to mess up her mother-in-law's life and get her to marry somebody else. But I mean, we're so sure that she's lying. I mean, maybe she's telling the truth and she shouldn't be allowed to eat truma. How can we allow it? Nonetheless, Rabbi Tarfon argues. Now, that means we seem to have two cases exactly the same, in which Rabbi Tarfon says, when we say we don't trust someone to give edus, it's in completely we don't trust. Doesn't matter which direction, lekula, lechumra, whether there's a chashash of achilas truma or the problem of being matir. One is the case of a tzara, and one is the case of a mother-in-law. Exactly the same case. Does it go across the board? The fact that we don't trust her for anything, or was it only vis-a-vis marriage? Rabbi Akiva in both cases argues and says, well, I mean, you can't say for sure she's lying. She may be telling her the truth, and therefore she should not be allowed to eat truma. Why do we need two cases to tell us the same halacha? Tzricha, says the Gemara. Actually, we definitely need both cases. I'll tell you why. Because remember that the logic behind these two cases is different. Because if I had only known the itmar hach, let's say I would have had the kamaita. The first case, that was the case of a tzara, where maybe over there, Rabbi Tarfon says, you know what? This woman hates her so much that she cannot be trusted to have any opinion whatsoever as to the halachic status of this woman. Why is that? Because they are direct competitors for their husband. And basically, she is suffering every single time her husband spends a night with this other woman. It's painful. And she's not getting her husband. This other woman is getting her husband. Now that, imagine living with a situation like that. That can certainly be extremely hateful. So maybe she is completely not trustworthy. When it comes to a mother-in-law, as we said yesterday, okay, the mother-in-law, she keeps telling her husband all the bad things that she does. Okay, I understand that's resentment. I mean, that's not blind hatred. So chamuta is tzara mili d'alma. So over there, okay, it's other issues that are giving her pain. So maybe over there, Rabbi Tarfon admits we can't completely ignore. We totally disregard anything that she said. I mean, listen, she's not blinded. She's just full of resentment. So I would think that maybe Rabbi Tarfon would be made in that case of Rabbi Akiva. And if you tell me the other case, which is the case of the mother-in-law, I would say maybe that's why Rabbi Akiva says, oh, look, I mean, how much does she hate her, for heaven's sake? She resents her. Because of that, we should allow her to continue eating truma as if she has nothing to say. I don't think so. But maybe in that first case where, I mean, do you understand that blind hatred of a tzara to a tzara? Maybe Rabbi Akiva would actually agree with Rabbi Tarfon that we completely ignore anything that she has to say about her object of deep hatred. Because basically deep hatred is a blinding emotion. And this is therefore a witness who has no eyes, so to speak. She is blind. This is the type of things that go on when people hate each other. They can say anything. But if they just resent each other, then they can't say anything. It's just that we don't trust them. So maybe in that case, Rabbi Akiva would say, if there's that level of hatred, then she has no right to say anything at all. And therefore, even the Gabe Achilas Truma, we don't worry about it. Therefore, we need to know the halacha is the same, whether in cases of blinding hatred or in cases of resentment. If we're not going to accept what she says vis-a-vis the wedding, then according to Rabbi Akiva, we cannot accept it vis-a-vis the Truma. Omer Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, but the halacha is like Rabbi Tarf. And therefore, she can continue to eating truma in both of these cases. And Abaya says, I don't need Shmuel to tell me that. I find it beferish in the Mishnah that we are going to have. And that is that it says in the Mishnah that if she and her husband go le'evra hayam, there she is in Medinat Hayam, and when she left, they didn't have any children. She comes back from Medinat Hayam and she said, I had a child while I was overseas, but unfortunately the child died, and then after that my husband died. Okay, so then basically what she's saying is irrelevant, because she had a chazaka originally that she was supposed to go to her yava, right? So then when she says, I had a child, when she now says, I don't have a child, so that was a pesha asar at that moment anyway. Then it was a pesha hitir, and now I'm mutter. So what's the problem? She's not changing her chazaka, and therefore she's an emenet to be mityabemet. But if she said, I had a child, the child's not with me because the child died, but first my husband died, and then my child died. Oh, then a non-emenet, she can't go and get married l'shuk because of the fact that she was originally a cheskas yevama to this guy. But we are worried about it and concerned that she might be telling the truth, in which case she's not allowed to get Yibum, right? Because at the moment that her husband died, the child was still alive. And therefore, if we allow her to get Yibum, then she's going to be over on an Erva D'Oraisa. So therefore, Choshishin Midvarea, we are concerned about what she says, and we can only allow her to do chalitza, but we cannot allow Yibum in this case to make sure that there's no iser erva. Now, I say, let's be medayek the words, choshishin lidvareha. We are concerned over here about what she has to say about herself. Instead of simply saying, as Tosis points out, choletzit v'lo mityabemet, or maybe which is similar to what we had before. So you see from here, only because it's her words, but the great sarata, so if, in the event that there would have been a tzara in this case, that means we will not care about what she says, legabe the tzara, and we will completely ignore what it is that one tzara says about the other. Who's the author of that shita? Rabbi Tarfon. That even though you understand that we have din of a tzara, you thought it's specifically legabi one halacha, she has nothing to say about anything. Shema Amina, like Rabbi Tarfon. Excellent. Now we put Richie into overtime today.
זאת חלק מישנה.
Now let's talk about a case where somebody gets himself into real trouble, and the question is, does Rabbi Akiva extend his idea that when you want to extricate yourself, you need to handle all of the issues? Now, Rabbi Akiva said in the Mishnah that we just had that, look, if there's a tzad that she's not allowed to eat truma, so we can't allow her to eat truma just because we don't trust the situation. We have a question. If we have a question, you have to get yourself out of the pickle, and therefore don't get married, but don't eat truma either. Now, we have a very similar situation where a person gets himself into a pickle and now needs to extricate himself. Can he do it leaving the issue open, or must he handle all possibilities? So supposing a guy goes ahead and he gives kedushin to one of five women. Now, this guy was a little tipsy. He's sitting there in a bar. He's got these five girls all start up with him. And he gives one of them, I'll buy you a drink if you marry me. Okay, fine. Now, which one was it? I don't remember which one. They're all saying, oh, thanks for the drink, buddy. That was wonderful. Now, he does not feel like marrying all these women. As a matter of fact, he doesn't want to be married to any of these women. He's sorry he ever walked into that bar. So each one of these women is claiming he bought me the drink. So kol achat omeret oti kidesh. So now if he wants to get out of this pickle, he's going to have to give a get to every one of them, because now, of course, we have a suffix d'oraisa, and he has to give each one of them a get. Not only that, he would not be allowed to marry any of the arayas. He can't marry these women's daughters, sisters, mothers, as if there's a chashash that he's married. But what about the ketubah? Now, the ketubah is a financial issue. So what does he do? Well, he's meniach ketubah b'nehim. He takes the money for the ketubah. He doesn't have to give the money to each one of them. But what he does is he puts the ketubah down between them, and therefore he won't have to give a get, because at the end of the mealy, they're all dead. They've killed each other. No, that's not really what happened. When it says he puts the ketubah down and he lets them fight it out, it doesn't mean he lets them tear each other's hair out. It means he goes to Beis Din, he gives Beis Din the ketubah, and he says, okay, give it to everyone I owe the ketubah to. So you gentlemen are very skilled. I'm sure, like Shlomo HaMelech, you figure out which one needs the ksuva. I gave my ksuva. I'm out of here. So that's all we would have to do, says Rabbi Tarfon. Rabbi Akiva says, now wait a minute. Ein zo derech motzi oto midei avera. Now wait a second. I can get himself out of an avera over here. If he owes a ksuva, he's got to pay for a ksuva, doesn't he? He can't just go and give the ksuva to Beis Din. What are they supposed to do? So therefore, achi yiten getu ketubah l'kol achat v'achat. So he's going to need to pay off. Besides giving the get in order to be matir them, he is also going to have to pay off every one of them. Now, how about in a case where he stole money from one of five people? We're in a room. He sneaks in, walks off with somebody's wallet. He doesn't know whose wallet. Everybody put their pants over the back of a chair. Each one of them claims, he stole my wallet. So then we have the same issue. He can take the stolen money and put it down between them. Or, again, Tosas Ashita is that he actually gives it to Beis Din, not that he waits for the person to prove that it's theirs himself, or puts it between them. So according to Rabbi Tarfon, whatever the meaning of Meniach Zelavineyem, this is another such case. Rabbi Akiva says, no, this case is certainly not going to save him from going to hell. Ein zo derech motzio midei avera. I mean, the guy stole money. He has to return the money. So what good is it to be meniach gezel b'neihem? If he wants to get out of the pickle he put himself into, he's going to have to pay every one of these people. Ad sheyishaleim L'kol echad v'echad. Now, wait a minute. First of all, I mean, we do have an issue before we even start the Gemara. If this guy was only Mekadesh, one of these women at the bar, I thought that there's no ksuva for Kedushin, at least according to one approach. So why would he have to pay a ksuva if he was only Mekadesh her? We're going to be Medayik in a moment that he was only Mekadesh her. So as far as that's concerned, we could say that according to the Shita, that there is no ketuvah in cases of only Kedushin. So we could say that it's talking about over here, they were konumiyadai to actually, he was mechayev himself in a ketuvah at the early stage of Eris and whatever. Okay, that is not our issue over here, because anyway, that's a machlokas. But what is our issue is that we seem to have a confused situation, because the question is, it says Avera, right? Now, what is the Avera exactly? Did he start off doing an Avera? I mean, I understand in the case where he stole the guy's wallet. So there, it makes sense for Rabbi Akiva to say, look, I mean, the guy can't go around stealing and then say, well, I don't have to fix what I stole because he did something wrong. I mean, if he was Makadish, a woman, so what did he do wrong? So, I mean, you're telling me he got himself into a pickle. Yes, but it's not a pickled Avera. It's just a plain old-fashioned pickle. And therefore, in that case, would Rabbi Akiva still insist that he needs to get himself out of the pickle? Now, note that the first case is a case where it says he was Mekadesh, a woman. Doesn't say he was Baal, a woman. He was Mekadesh, a woman. But in the second case, it specifies he stole. And instead of saying another case where he could say, okay, I bought this cell phone. Now, which one of you guys sold me the cell phone? I did. Uh-oh. So, all right. So who do I pay? Me. So we have the same problem over there. Now, over there, he didn't do anything wrong. And we could have conveyed the same message by saying he leaves the money for the cell phone. Bineyam or Mistalei. So, I mean, on the one hand, the Mishnah is stressing he didn't do anything wrong. And in the other case, the Mishnah is stressing he did do something wrong. So I don't get it. So then the Mishnah is really a contradiction. It doesn't seem to be going, not according to the Shita of the Tanakhama, which we're going to discuss who that is. There is a Tanakhama, and Rav Shimon ben Elazar argue about how to understand the machlokas that we have over here between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfa. Because take a look in this braisa. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, listen. Lo nechlekel Rabbi Tarfa Rabbi Akiva. Of course, even Rabbi Akiva agrees. The guy didn't do anything wrong if he gave Kiddushin to five women. He's allowed to marry five women. So now he doesn't remember which one it was. Okay, he doesn't know. So what's the big deal? He could just put the ksuva down and let them fight it out, fighting it out in court, whatever the case is. Of course, he could be miniach to Rabbanim. The case was where he went a little further than just giving a drink to the girl, and he actually slept with all of these five women, l'shem kiddushin. Now, that's a big no-no. You're not supposed to be Mekadesh Anisha with Bia. And therefore, he was a bad boy. So that's where they were arguing. Ama nechleku al shaba'al. So Rabbi Tarfon says, okay, what's the difference? I mean, the bottom line is he didn't sleep with all five, right? He slept with one woman. Each one of them is claiming that it's her. He puts the ksuva down in his talik. I mean, so what did he do wrong? He didn't do wrong. Whereas Rabbi Akiva says, no, he was a bad boy. Achi shalem l'kol achat v'achat. I mean, listen, he basically, I mean, you know, this is not nice. Walks into a bar, ends up sleeping with this woman under the bar stool. And I mean, that's not nice. And now he embarrasses her, and now he doesn't want to be married to her, and now he's going to have to pay ksuva. And so, yeah, I think he should pay the ksuva to everyone. If this is the way he wants to treat women, then let him pay. And over there, Rabbi Tarfon says, even so, he doesn't have to pay. And in the last case as well, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon would never have argued about a case where a guy bought a cell phone from six vendors, and they're all claiming it was from them. Well, if he doesn't know which vendor it was, of course he could put the money down and let them fight it out. The only case was where he stole a cell phone, that he puts the cell phone down, according to Rabbi Tarfon, or according to Rabbi Akiva. Look, if you're going to steal, then we're going to punish you, and you have to get out of the Avera. I mean, how are you going to get out of the Avera if you're not going to return the cell phone that you stole? You're going to have to give the money for the cell phone to every one of the people that you might have stolen from. So now, if Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, is saying that in the case of Kidesh, where he didn't do anything wrong, and in the case of Lokach, he didn't do anything wrong, so then there is no machlokas. It's pretty clear that the Tanakhama argues. Tanakhama assumes the machlokas, whether you did something wrong or you didn't do something wrong. Now, here the Mishnah contradicts itself. It's crazy. You can't have it both ways, because the first case in the Mishnah is Kidesh, where he didn't do anything wrong. And the second case is the Mishnah is Gazal, where he did do something wrong. So therefore, if you're going to tell me that it's going according to the Tanakhama, then you should have similar cases, Kidesh and Lakach, nonetheless they argue. And if you're going like Reb Shimon ben Elazar, you should say, no, Baal v'Gazal. Why both ways? No, I don't know. I'm not so worried about this. It could work out very good according to Reb Shimon ben Elazar, only if he did something wrong. And when it says he was Mekadesh, it means he was Mekadesh b'via. And that's what we're meant to understand from the Sefer in which he embarrassed this woman. And why is it, in fact, that Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar has to have two separate cases if they're both saying the same things? Because we want to know the case of Kidesh to tell me that Rabbi Akiva is ready to say that even though this guy was a bad boy, because Kidesh means Kidesh Bibia, which he shouldn't have done, but which, of course, is only an Issur Drabanan as being inappropriate. I mean, a woman is mitkadeshet b'biyah. So nonetheless, even though he was just a bad boy, so he's naughty. Rabbi Akiva says, even if he's naughty, he has to be yotzei midei avera. And then we want to know the next case where naughty is an outright thief. What kind of naughty? And that's to tell me, even if he's an outright thief, Rabbi Tarfon still says that the din is that we do not force him to go to that kind of thing. And in fact, this would be fine. And this brings us to another very overtime moment of, oh, Sir Richard.
Rabbi, I don't understand much something. In most of these cases, there's one guy who did something questionable, but there are four liars. Four liars, the women, the shopkeepers. I mean, don't they get to be punished for their lying? I mean, it doesn't seem fair, you know?
Are you a member of the Human Rights Commission that we should punish all because there are liars? Only Israelis do that.
I know, greed should be dealt with. I mean, it just doesn't seem right.
Yes, but the truth is that this sugya is not our primary sugya. It actually is nogeya elsewhere. We go into the halachas. What does it actually mean? We're bringing it up because of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon for the continuation. Minogeya are halachas, so your point is well made. And Bezrat Hashem, may we be zocha to do that again and again and again and again. Okay, Rich.
We're reaching the 120 limit, Rabbi.
Okay. 120 is great.
Zot ha'elek ha'mishnah.
Ha'isha shehalcha. Now here we've got a woman who goes me'evra yam, and this was we spoke about the opposite case. She went overseas with her husband, and they went without a child. Now, in this Mishnah, the woman goes overseas with a child. So that means that there's a chazaka that she is not allowed to the Yovam. She comes back from overseas, and she says, a terrible tragedy. My husband died, and then my child died. Okay, but she's not changing anything, because she was a chazaka that she was mutarah to get married to anybody before, and she is saying, I am mutar to get married to anybody. Because what happened was is that although my child is no longer alive to pater me from Yibum, but he was alive at the time of the death of my husband. So therefore, nothing changes. But if she says, mate b'ni first and then mate b'ali, so then she is claiming that she can marry the Yavam. Now, in that case, we don't allow her to marry the Yavam, because remember, this whole idea of allowing is only because of the problem of Agunais. And there's no reason why we have to give Bimat or something. There's no issue of Agunot over here. So therefore, a nanem in it. But we are worried that maybe she's telling the truth, and we have to be machbra on her, as she says she's not allowed to marry anybody else if we're going to ask her, and therefore she can't do Yibum because that would be Aser. So she only can do Chalitza and not Yibum. Now, what about if when they went L'Ever HaYam, she went and there was no child? And she came back and she said, I had a child and my child died. And then my husband died. So I'm still the way I was before. And I still have to do Yibum. So there she's Ne'emenet, because she's not changing the Chazaka at all. If she says, but first by Bali and then my child died, and therefore I am allowed to marry whoever I wish, then she's not Ne'emenet, because she's being Materet et Atzma without Chalitza. But since when she left, she needed Yibum or Chalitza, why should we be Mat to her? She's not going to be in a state of being unable to marry anybody. So therefore, she needs to get Chalitza. Choshishin l'dvoreha, but choletzet v'lo mityabemet in this case, because she says that she would be asura to the Yava. So in this case, how about if she says that she leaves and with her husband without a child, but without a Yava, meaning that there was only one child in the family, and therefore even if her husband would die, there would be no problem of Yibum. She comes back and she says, well, you know, my mother-in-law had another boy when I was overseas with my husband. And now there's a brother, but he's dead. So meit ba'ali, v'achar kach meit yabmi, or whatever. Meit yabami, v'achar kach ba'ali. Bottom line is that in between, it's a curious situation where I was in a state of needing yibum maybe, but now I have no yavam. But since she's not changing the chazaka that was there before, that she is muteret, then she remains muteret, because as far as saying that she had a yavam, that's all fine, but that's only on the basis of her own peh, and apeh she'asar u'apeh she'itir. She said, I had a yavam. Thank you very much for letting us know. But he's dead. Oh, okay, fine. So now you're back the way you were. Now, suppose she goes together with her yavam and with her husband. They all go overseas. There's no child. And now she says, tragedy happened, my husband died, and then my Yavam died, or my Yavam died, and then my husband died. So in this case, if she says, my husband died, I'm allowed to marry anybody, she is not really allowed, because we don't know that this is true. When she left, she did need Yibum in order to get married. And now she's claiming she doesn't need Yibum in order to get married. So there she's not Ne'emenet, because all of the din allowing her is only to exclude problems of Igun. And Eina Isha Ne'emenet Lomar, she's not allowed to say things like, my Yavam died, now I can get married. Why would we believe her? Her husband died, yes, but that's because of the takana that we made of the horrendous consequences that were based on the idea that she's going to be careful about it and so on and so forth. Remember, over here, we don't have any of those chashashot of Igun. We don't have the chashashot either of the terrible consequence. We're talking about an Isra Lav here. And she's not believed on that. A man who comes back and says, my brother died and I have to do Yibum. He's not believed either. Why should we believe him that he is supposed to be marrying an erva? It doesn't make sense. And a man is not believed to say, well, my wife died, so now I'm going to marry her sister. Why would we believe him? So in all of these cases, we do not have this type of takana because we do not have the concern that gave birth to the takana, then certainly there is no ne'emanut. Now, the question is, what we've come up with is sort of an idea that there is a standing assumption of hatred, perhaps, towards the Yavam, and that therefore she would be lying and so on. Now, let me ask you something. How far does that go? Suppose a husband wants to give a wife a get. The wife is not here. The husband is deathly ill. If he doesn't give her a get today and he dies without that get, then she is going to fall to a Yavam. So what he does is, oh my God, my poor wife, she's going to fall to my awful brother. I will give her a get. But how can you give her a get? She's not here, and she didn't make a shliach to be mekabel the get. I will make a shliach to be mekabel the get. But you're the husband. I know, but there's a principle of zachin la adam shelo befanav. If you know that something is a benefit to a person, then you can arrange that that benefit should accrue to him because we basically have a chazaka that that's what he wants. So this creates a shlichut. Therefore, it's really a shlichut that allows her to get her get. What's the din? Are we so convinced that even the sanyale zechutula, this is a given, zochin onam shelo befanav, in which case the get is fine, even though she's not around? Or do we say, I don't know. I mean, is it a universal? It's certainly possible that she is in love with the Yavam, you know? I mean, so maybe this is a chovul love. I divorce her, then that would be a nightmare. She's been waiting for me to drop dead so she can marry my brother. So how do we act in this case? After all, ein chavim la adam shelo befanav. I can't do something which might be an anti-advantage, it's disadvantage, and that I cannot do. So what would be the halacha? Amar Leis Reb Nachman said, that's the Mishnah. Because what does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah had two situations, right? One situation where the woman was saying that she wants to change the chazaka that she went overseas with, which was that she's a surah to the Yavam, and one is that she wants to change the status of her being chayeves in Yibum. And in both cases, it says that she is not believed to change the chazaka, but choshishin lidvoreha. And therefore, she can only have chalitza and not Yibum. So that means very clearly that there are women that may hate their Yavam, and therefore we assume that they're lying in order not to need the Yavam. And there may be women who are in love with the Yavam, and maybe they would lie in order to be matir the Yavam. And therefore, you see from here that we certainly cannot give a get on the assumption that she's going to be so happy to be saved from a Yavam. Well, Malay Ravina Larova, well, what about if they've been fighting with each other? How about Amizakeh get lishtobu makom kitata mahu? They hate each other's guts. So in that case, he wants to give a get. Do we assume that over there, it's certainly advantageous for her to be makabel the get, and so we can make a shliach, even though she did not make a shliach, because it gets her out of this misery of being married to this idiot. Oh, Dilma, or do we say that necha de gufa odifla, that nonetheless, she likes the fact that she has a body around that is hers, and therefore, even if they fight, she'd rather be in a miserable relationship than in no relationship. Well, Tashma, we have the famous dictum of Reish Lakish that we talk about over there, that the halacha is a get isn't even chal, if we don't know that at this time, she wants to get. Even if she says, I wanted once to get a get. we still view a get to be an actual chova and not a schus. Why? This is the famous ma'amar, which Moshe Forman will be putting into the flashcards, which is tav lemetav tandu milemetav armalu. It's better to be two bodies than to be living all alone. So whatever that body is doesn't really matter to me, as long as it works. There's other ways of saying this. Abaya says, a woman might be married to an ant. The Shumshamana Gavra, her husband is an ant, meaning he's a midget and you can barely see him. Nonetheless, Kursei Becharata Ramula, she puts the big armchair between all of the matrons in town. And nobody considers her to be unsuited to be a matron. Nobody says, you're only married to an aunt. No, on the contrary. They call her auntie and everything is fine. So there's another way of saying this also. Rav Papa says, if you're married, a woman is married to a naftza. Naftza, gava, is a very low class. So she's married to a garbage collector. A naftza actually is somebody who does wool combing. So it's a completely unskilled job. Nonetheless, she will call him out to the porch and sit on the porch stairs so everybody could see him as they walk by, because she's got her hubby. That's all that counts. Rav Ashi says, even if her husband is a kulsa, so a kulsa comes from the word kilasa. A kalasa means disgraceful, meaning that there's something wrong with his yichus. Doesn't matter. Lo by talpeche lekidra. Bottom line is, she won't even ask him to get her a falafel. The important thing is, we want men. And Tana, yes, that's true, but don't think that they're going to bed with the aunt and with the kulsa. They're not. Well, what about all the kids? Ridiculous. They're all sleeping around. Kulan mizanot v'tolot v'baliyam. The point is, they want cover. A man under the covers is a cover for what's going on under the covers. And therefore, they feel it's perfectly all right. Don't give me no get, because then I'm really in trouble.